You are listening to the Doug Hagman Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagman.
And I want to wish everyone a good Thursday morning. Grab a cup of coffee, pull up a chair, let's sit down, let's talk. Or I could start off by saying, members of the jury, and then provide either my opening argument or closing statement. Either one, it fits. This show, Thursday, July 27th, 2017, is going to be dedicated to really summarizing, giving you the facts, the total facts, the complete facts on the Awan scandal, the Awan criminal scandal that's taking place in Washington, D.C. right now. Well, all across the globe. At the epicenter of this, of course, is Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I referenced this yesterday. We've been referencing this on our primary program, the Hagman Report, that airs 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time right here on the Global Star Radio Network. We've been talking about this for many months. But I think it's important to kind of take a step back, to provide all of the information and let you decide. Because no one in the mainstream media, with the exception of Sean Hannity at Fox, and I believe in spite of Fox, please listen to me carefully when I say that, a good friend Sean Hannity is the only one really taking up the mantle of this. CNN, nothing. MSNBC, nothing. They're still stuck on Russia. Russia does the leaks, hacks, data breaches, to be more specific, have a lot to do with what I'm going to be talking about. As a matter of fact, let's start out with that, an overview of really the hacks. It was June 14th, 2016, when the Washington Post reported that Russian hackers obtained DNC communications. You remember that? That was June 14th, 2016. Now, let's follow along here because this is an important timeline. All of these timelines, from the DNC hacks to the death, the murder of Seth Rich and others, the leaking of the Podesta emails by WikiLeaks in October, the tarmac meeting and such between Clinton and Lynch, the actions of Barack Hussein Obama, and the Russian narrative. All of these have intersecting ties. It is incredible when you put this on a whiteboard or you take index cards and put it on a corkboard and you draw lines between the different events, the intersecting events, and it's incredible. And also when you do the actual investigation, do the actual research, what happens when you see when you see the bigger picture. Nothing that we are talking about happens in a vacuum. So let's get started. It was June 14th, 2016, when the Washington Post reported the DNC was breached, email communications were breached. Now, who was head of the DNC at that time? Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Keep that in mind. It was June 27th. The infamous tarmac meeting between Bill Clinton and then Attorney General Loretta Lynch. Unprecedented meeting, of course, inside a jet at the Phoenix, Arizona airport. Then we move to July 5th, 2016, when FBI Chief James Comey announces in a staged news conference, just a bizarre conference, that the FBI looked into Hillary Clinton's handling of the state secrets while Secretary of State. And while she's guilty of seriously mishandling the information, he called her actions extremely careless, but not rising to the level necessarily of criminal, or at least any prosecutable criminal case, really. I spoke to a U.S. federal prosecutor who would be glad to take that case. July 10th, 5 days after that meeting and 12 days after it was known, after this alleged DNC breach, Seth Rich is found with two gunshot wounds in his back, one through and through, one inside his body on a Washington, D.C. street. That was July 10th, 2016. That deserves a special program by itself. Then we have July 22nd, just 3 days before the DNC convention begins. The WikiLeaks, they released 44,053 emails with thousands, 8,000 attachments, 8,000 plus attachments, that really absolutely undermined Hillary Clinton's candid nature or her honesty, proved that she was lying. What happened next? That resulted in the resignation of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. You know, it was the next day, July 23rd, 2016, without any more than claims, allegations, innuendos, reports started appearing in the destroy Donald Trump media, that Donald Trump and the alleged links, or Donald Trump has alleged links to Russia and members of his staff. Now that ties into the Fusion GPS opposition research and other opposition research firms here in the United States and abroad. Folks, this is bigger than anything you can imagine. I've been working on this essentially 24/7 for the last couple of months, working with other researchers. Hat tip to all of the citizen journalists on Reddit, hat tip and 4chan and Vote. Incredible job, people, incredible job. And also the independent researchers such as Liz Croken, Melissa, the Honeybee, and others. Josh Kaplan from Vessel News, all doing just a great job. Andrew Kerr, too numerous to mention. Those just come to mind right away. But what we're seeing here is the dissection of a criminal enterprise so vast. This is a huge chunk of the deep state. All right. 3 days before the DNC begins, again, 44,053 emails were released, thousands, 8,000 attachments. I believe it's 8,000. It could be 17,000, but from memory, it was up there in the thousands. And again, That's when the narrative, the Russian narrative, began. August 11th, 2016, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi states publicly for the first time and without any reservation whatsoever, "Hey, it's the Russians." Now, that's the first time, as far as I could tell, on record, any government official, and very specifically Nancy Pelosi, August 11th, 2016, said it's the Russians. August 25th of the same of last year, August 25th, 2016, there was a private briefing between, four members of Congress by CIA Director John Brennan, who reportedly discussed a very significant Russian breach of the Democratic National Committee of the DNC. The New York Times claimed that there were signs of possible connections to the Donald Trump campaign. You see the narrative beginning to form now, August 25th, 2016. And you know what? It might be good, folks, to take a notepad and mark these dates down, or keep these dates in mind, because we're going to be referring to these events in future programming. I'm going to be talking about this, each individual event each day, because you need to understand, you need to see the flow chart. And I'm going to begin writing about this again. I haven't had the time to do that, but I'm going to make the time. In September 5th to be exact, 2016, the Washington Post was saying that the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper at the time, was looking into efforts by Russia to create dissension within the 2016 presidential election, but yet cited no direct evidence to back up that claim. And then on October 7th, 2016, the U.S. government is quoted as formally accusing Russia of hacking the campaign to interfere with U.S. elections. Now, the quote comes from the DNI, from Clapper's office. Now, Clapper stated this, or the statement from Clapper's office, to be precise, was this. And I quote, "The U.S. intelligence community is confident that the Russian government directed the recent compromises of emails from U.S. persons and institutions, including from U.S. political organizations." Now, that gives you an overview running up to the election. And, of course, you could go on from that, as you well should, the additional Comey news conference and such that reopened or seemed to reopen the Hillary Clinton investigation. That leads us to where we are now. We have right now Donald Trump as president of the United States, but he's president under fire. It's incredible what the corporate mass media is doing to him. Deep state that is comprised of the corporate mass media, the Never Trumpers, the former Obama regime officials, including his organization, American Oversight, and various other groups and individuals. It's incredible what they are doing to take President Donald Trump down against the will of the American people. To the extent we find ourselves today with an independent counsel headed by Robert Mueller, dear friend of James Comey. And I had referenced previously who Mueller is assembling. He's assembling a team of investigators, of attorneys. Who are they? Well, let's just take five. You've got James Quarles. Isn't it interesting that Quarles had supported the DNC and specifically Hillary Clinton to the tune of $32,850? You have Jeanine Rhee. She provided monetary support for DNC and Hillary Clinton for $13,950. Andrew Weissman, $4,300. Elizabeth Preloger, $750. And Brandon Van Grack, that is, $286. I know that sounds like a paltry amount, but with that support goes other aspects to that. Not just financial support. So right there, five members of Mueller's team supporting Hillary Clinton for president, supporting the DNC, clearly anti-Donald Trump, clearly anti-everything that Trump stands for. And we, as American people, are supposed to say, turn our heads and say, it's okay. Isn't that interesting? And I had gone through the timeline with respect to the email, the DNC email hacks, and the murder of Seth Rich. When I say hacks, meaning leaks, more specifically. But one of the companies, and I'd mentioned this, Fusion GPS, a company, it's an opposition research company started by three journalists from the Wall Street Journal, of course. They began investigating Donald Trump in September of 2015. Their investigation was tied to the Bush family, a Never Trumper, if you will, an anti-Trump movement initially. And then it was taken over in March of 2016 by a Hillary individual, somebody representing Hillary. But don't forget, I like to remind people all of the time, this is the group that published various documents and various things to delegitimize the investigation of the Center for Medical Progress against Planned Parenthood, to also delegitimize the campaign of Mitt Romney. Not that I'm a Romney fan, but you have to take a look. You have to take the political blinders off. You cannot really approach this from a Republican-Democrat standpoint. You have to take the blinders off. Well, what does this have to do with the Owen brothers? Well, okay, all of these, as I said, all of these lines, all of these dates, times, they intersect. So unless you're plugged in to the independent media, you're not going to hear what I'm going to be telling you. You're just not going to hear it at all. And look, we've had George Webb on. We know of his work. We know of his investigation. We've had him on as a guest. We've had others on as guests as well to talk about Dr. Jerome Corsi, for example, to talk about the Owen brothers. And they've done a great job. And George, of course, has gone out to the various locations using his iPhone and cameras and what have you, and showing people in real time what the what his investigation was all about. Now, as an investigator for the past 30 plus years, one thing I'm not a fan of, and I've had discussions about this with police, with the federal agents, I'm not a fan of contemporaneously filming an investigation. The reason being, there's a lot of potential collateral damage. There's a lot of white noise. A lot of things that I believe in recording things. Obviously, yes, but not to broadcast it, because you have to conduct an analysis. All right. As a matter of fact, later on today, I'm going to be doing a forensic analysis of blood spatter analysis on an old murder that took place actually 4 decades ago. And take a look at the crime scene photos and from a forensic standpoint. Now, it would, to equate that to what I'm talking about, it would be a mistake to publish that in the newspaper and say, "Hey, what do you see? What do you all see? Contemporaneous to what I'm looking at, that is." It just wouldn't make sense. But that's just my preference, as opposed to. Now, you might find it very interesting, and I think people do like that, by the way, the George Webb methodology. People enjoy that, and they tune in and watch it. But again, that becomes extremely and potentially misleading. Now, again, I'm not saying George Webb is misleading at all, but people can jump to conclusions, and things could happen. But I applaud him. And I applaud his way of doing things, in his way, that is. Because no one else is doing this. We are, but it's behind the scenes. It's with other investigators, and it's not published until we analyze the information that we collect. So that's just that. That's that. But let's go back to February 2nd of this year now, February 2nd, 2017, when there were three Pakistani brothers with top access to the computer systems inside of the House of Representatives containing some of the nation's most sensitive information. They were walked out of the U.S. Capitol. They were removed from the Capitol, or from their positions by U.S. Capitol Police. These three brothers, Imran Awan, Abid Awan, and Jamal Awan, each were shared employees of at least 31 Democratic national or Democratic congressional representatives. But the case itself and the potential damage is much, much worse than it's being reported, if it's being reported at all. And as I said, the only one I've seen publicly report this in the mainstream media, and I include Fox in that, is Sean Hannity. And again, I believe he's doing it in spite of the platform of Fox. And understand when I say that exactly what I'm saying. Now, I told you three. I gave you the names of three Owen brothers, but let me tell you there are more than the three Owen brothers. I mentioned Imran, Abid, and Jamal Owen. Imran was the first. He began working as an IT for Democratic House members back in 2003, and since 2004, the three brothers and their two wives collectively have taken over $5 million in cash monetary compensation for their IT work. But in fact, all three, or the three brothers, Imran, Abid, and Jamal, worked for 31 House Democrats, as did Imran's wife, Hina Alvi, as did two others that you're not hearing about, Omar Awan and Raou Abbas. Now, Abbas is Imran's best friend. Omar Awan is yet a younger brother. He came later on the scene later. But from, I'm going to say, to be most accurate, I've got the actual documents, and I want to thank Melissa Zachariah, the honeybee, for providing me this from the dark web. The actual amounts, the dollar amounts of compensation paid to Imran and others, but the bottom line, between 2009, to be truly accurate, and 17, that's a period of really less than, that's a period of about 7 years, they pulled in $5 million in compensation. They started out at really about four times, three to four times the amount, cash amount, or the compensation amount as a normal IT staffer. Now, as I mentioned, they were walked out of the Capitol on, they were arrested, or I don't want to say arrested, they were since they were under investigation, they were escorted out from the Capitol building on February 2nd, 2017. While the corporate media is intent on obviously proving some nebulous, non-existent cyber connection between President Donald Trump and the Russians, they have yet to pay even the most basic lip service to this case of apparent espionage and even potential blackmail and definite criminality. And we're going to be getting, or I'm going to be getting into this as we go through this. But the Awan brothers had complete and direct access to information of three extremely sensitive committees in their positions: the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, the Homeland Security Committee, and the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Please understand that these committees are some of the most sensitive, contain some of the most sensitive information and some of the most sensitive operational information in America. The access to the information they had, along with the known suspected affiliations to each, by each of them, to such groups as Hezbollah and the Muslim Brotherhood, has shaken the government insiders with knowledge about this case. I've talked to people, and they've said, look, this is bigger than anyone can imagine. Imran Awan, of course, has been identified as the group's leader, initially providing computer services for Florida Democrat and Florida former National DNC Chairman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Representative Meeks was initially hired him, brought him into the fold, quickly taken over by Wasserman Schultz. Meeks, of course, still has a relationship, as does Wasserman Schultz, with Awan, Imran. Among House members who continued or employed the services of Imran Awan were Andre Carson, the second Muslim member of the House of Representatives, as did Congresswoman Jackie Speier. And so loved was Imran Awan and even his brothers. It was on March 22nd of last year when Jackie Speier was one of eight House members who asked for additional funding so that the Awan clan could secure top secret SCI level clearance. Now, they don't forget, they had access to this in the computers. Think of it this way. You have a network. Each individual, they had access to all of the top secret. I'm not going to go into explaining it, it'll take too much time, but bottom line is the Awan brothers, Hina Alvi, who is the wife of Imran Awan, and the other wife had access. So five, six people now altogether had access to all of this information. Not only that, it was discovered that they had set up an external server, an offsite server. So the information was just not available to them on site at the Capitol building. However, it was available to them off site. As I mentioned, They were paid more than three times the salary of a normal IT worker, grossing upwards of $5 million combined during their tenure as IT professionals. And I just want to mention, an average IT professional makes about $55,000 per year. Imran was paid $165,130. Abid Awan grossed $164,980. And Jamal, $157,577. This, according to the government records, substantiated through, from the government records and also given, found on the dark web as well, with a further breakdown. Further investigation found that the three brothers, again, were just merely the core infiltrators, also on the government payroll, as I mentioned. Hina R. Alvi, that's A-L-V-I, the wife of Imran. Now, she was paid $168,300 per year. Nice job if you can get it, right? Natalie Sova, the wife of Abid Awan. You know, she was just paid a meager $34,854. But it gets worse, as I mentioned. Not only, as I looked at this, not only did the Awan clan have access to highly sensitive information, they set up an external server, as I mentioned, and they copied the information from congressional computers to their offsite server. Based on everything I could tell, they copied every document, every email, every record, all the sensitive and classified information to their own server and under their sole control. Initially described on February 2nd, 2017, when they were escorted out of the Capitol building or disallowed from coming in if they weren't in, as a procurement scam, meaning that this was an overbilling issue. That's how it played out. Oh, overbilling. They were scamming for more money despite their high salaries. You see, that doesn't make sense, but that's how it was initially described. But it was much more than that. Notably, in 2009, and this is where you really have to pay attention. Remember, I referenced other businesses held by the Awan brothers. Well, in 2009, the Awan brothers opened a car dealership in Virginia, identified as Cars International A. Now, do you want to do the... what does that stand for? Or what are the initials to that? Again, Cars International A. Do you want to do the acronym or shall I? Cars International A. CIA. Rather interesting, isn't it? It was an LLC. And even in court documents, it was referred to as the CIA. The information contained in several well-researched and very comprehensive investigative reports that include but are not limited to the Daily Caller, the Gateway Pundit, and, of course, as I mentioned, George Webb, who has been a guest on the Hagman Report, details the mysterious car dealership and notes that the Awan brothers were also the recipient of a loan, $100,000. Now, this was just not any loan. In this case, this was a loan made by an Iraqi politician, a disgraced doctor. His name, Ali al-Attar. That's Ali al-Attar. He's from Iraq. He fled back to Iraq. And he's got various ties to Muslim groups, including Hezbollah. So think about this. You've got the Awan brothers working for some of the three of the most sensitive groups in Congress, 31 Democrats have access to all of their information on the computer system, and they have obvious dealings with an Iraqi national named Ali al-Attar, who was born in Baghdad to Iranian parents. He was indicted by the U.S. government in 2012 for tax fraud that reportedly involved diverting $500,000 from his medical offices into his personal account, and which appeared, by the way, to be international in scope, When I looked at this, it does appear that he diverted money to the accounts of Middle Eastern terrorist groups. Now, I can't prove that. I'm not saying he did. But boy, when I start looking at this, it certainly looks that way. But he gave the Awans $100,000. Now, based on my contacts, the potential damage to our national security is incalculable. That's the word my source used. The source is also questioning why an investigation of this magnitude has not been handed off fully to the FBI. Well, in the same breath, he said, I think we all know why. That was a reference to McCabe, who is extremely loyal to, now this is according to my source, to Hillary Clinton and the Clinton people and Wasserman, Schultz, and others. But when you look at it this way, at this point, the weight of the evidence strongly suggests that the United States House of Representatives' computer systems, including and especially the documents and emails to and from the top representatives of the most sensitive committees, including but not limited to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, as I said, the Homeland Security Committee, and the House Foreign Affairs Committee, have been compromised from within. Consider what I just said in the context of the raid in Yemen. It was January 29th, 2017. We had a U.S. Navy SEAL that lost his life. Just 4 days later, the Awan brothers were banned from the Capitol. You remember that? Think about this timeline, though. It was January 29th, 2017. Donald Trump, as president, commander-in-chief, organized a military raid in Yemen against an al-Qaeda group. A Navy SEAL lost his life. The newspapers, the corporate media had a field day. A field day. Oh, what an incompetent boob Donald Trump is. But do you know, on the other side of the equation here, the other side of the coin, our military apparatus said it was as if they knew we were coming. It was as if they had inside information. Nothing went right. We had problems from the first second. Muslim infiltration in this country, in our government. We have had on our nightly program John Guandalo, who's written a fantastic book, available at superstore.wnd, I believe. And we've had Chris Gabatz, who actually infiltrated CARE. His father, Dave Gabatz, Paul Sperry, wrote Muslim Mafia. That's available at the WND Superstore. Just promo code Hagman. But see, they have documented the Muslim infiltration. This is what they've been screaming from the top of their lungs for the last 10 years. I've got information right now that I have yet to get out that other people know about that are close to me that will shock you to your core about just how infiltrated and just how compromised we are. But just to give you an idea, that's where we're at that gives you the broader picture. But let me pull the lens back a little further. Just to recap, the Awan brothers, Imran being the ringleader, Abid, Jamal, and Omar. You're going to be hearing about Omar Awan as well as Ra'u Abbas, who's Imran's best friend. And again, Hina Alvi and Natalia Sova. Hina Alvi is the wife of Imran, and Natalia Sova is the wife of Abid. They were all, in one way, shape, or form, connected to this IT. What would you call it? Conspiracy. Don't forget, and I want to remind people, it was in March of 2016, March 22nd of 2016, when a security letter was sent, signed by eight House members, Democratic House members, requesting top secret SCI clearance for Imran Awan and the Awan brothers. Yet, less than a year later, on February 2nd, they were escorted out of the Capitol, claiming, of course, the procurement scam was that they stole equipment from more than 20 House members' offices. And they were also accused of accessing IT systems without the knowledge of people that needed to have that knowledge. Well, finally, we moved to this past Monday, when Imran Awan was arrested as he was about to board a plane for Lahore, Pakistan. That's right. It's where everyone vacations, if you're Barack Obama or Imran Awan. He had already, what he had done was he, in January, he had gotten a loan from the Congressional Federal Credit Union using his primary residence as collateral for this equity loan for $165,000, to be accurate. An equity loan, $165,000. The problem, however, he didn't live there. Oh, and also, he sent $163,000 to, he wired that to Pakistan in January, right after he got the loan. He was also caught with $12,000 in cash on him. He wired $283,000 in January. I'm sorry, the loan was for $165,000, but he wired $283,000, to be clear, $283,000 in January to Pakistan. And you know what's interesting as well? In March, early March of this year, his wife, Hina Alvi, traveled to Lahore, Pakistan. At the airport, by the way, when you're taking money out of the country, anything over $10,000, you've got to notify, you've got to file the proper papers. But she was found to have $12,400 in cash on her. That's Hina Alvi. Now, she was booked to come back in September of 2017, but nothing suggested that she would come back, except for a plane ticket, which may or may not have been for real. But there it is. It's unbelievable as we look at this. And not a peep, not a word from the corporate controlled mass media. So grab another cup of coffee. Just to be clear again, the Awan brothers were hired by 31 House Democrats at a rate of 2.5 to 4 times the median pay. And very few ever saw them around that Capitol building, except when they were around the equipment. And they also reportedly took equipment, including hard drives, computers, laptops, mobile devices, modems, to another business that they had, in addition to Cars International, or CIA, where they repaired computers and dealt in computer work and such. Well, it was it is there, I do suspect, and I agree with others on this, where they modified things like modems and the hard drives of the computers for backdoor access. And again, they were concurrently running the front car dealership, Cars International A. Now, the Cars International A, in addition to selling cars, this appears to be a CIA proprietary front, which means that when you bring other people into the country, you don't want to leave a footprint. So they can hook them up with a car and such. But they also were allegedly driving dignitaries around while employed full-time for Congress. But all of the ones are alleged to have been involved in this burglary of 20 congressional offices, stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment, including computers and servers. That's the story, but also the bigger story is the information. And they were fired for illegally accessing and downloading the information to a private server, as I said, very similar to what Hillary and Huma Abedin did. And we're trying to get a handle on where the other brothers are. Imran was arrested on Monday. But it's interesting, given the fact that he is a flight risk, passport, cash, and I have to say, he and his brothers, but in particular Imran Awan in Pakistan, is treated as a traveling dignitary. And by that, I mean he is given police escorts in Pakistan. So there's a definite, I believe, connection to Pakistani ISI. And here we have Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who refused to fire Imran Awan and kept him on the payroll even after he was the subject of this kind of investigation. And it has been declared that Meeks, as well as Schultz, are good friends of Imran Awan. And Meeks, Representative Meeks, has ascribed Islamophobia to this investigation. Think about this. Think about how crazy this is. The ties to Hezbollah, at least one degree removed with that doctor. Imran owed money to Hezbollah, one could say, given the fact that he was given a $100,000 loan from a man that is connected, from a doctor, disgraced doctor, Iraqi national but Iranian born. It's unbelievable. But still, even after the arrest, and getting back to what I was saying earlier, how is it possible that he is allowed on bail, even with an ankle bracelet, given the fact that he is a flight risk? This man should be in jail. You and I would be. There's no way. Just imagine. It would be on par if you were found, if you were suspected of some sort of criminal activity and found in your briefcase or in your purse having, you know, a disguise and a false passport and $10,000 in cash. Yeah, we all walk around with that, right? Of course not. And I mentioned Representative Gregory Meeks. He said that they're being framed. That, seriously, because they're Muslim. Luke Rozniak from Daily Caller, I believe, has just done an amazing job in reporting on this. And in spite of all of the money that was available to him, what's interesting is the Awans had money troubles. Abid Awan declared bankruptcy in 2012, and he cited $1.1 million in debt. Unbelievable. And back to Dr. Dr. Ali Al-Attar, a former CIA officer by the name of Philip Giraldi, had stated reported that Ali Al-Attar was observed in Beirut, Lebanon, conversing with a Hezbollah official in 2012, shortly after he had made the loan to Imran Awan. So the connection is pretty valid. And Attar, by the way, had also been accused of helping provoke the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq as a leader of Iraqi dissidents opposed to Saddam Hussein. And the story kind of takes another different twist as well. I found this to be rather interesting. It was, and I'll be reporting on this again to let everyone know, there was a call received to a local police department in Virginia. I've got the police report right here. It was on January 5th, 2017, when the local police, were called to 6314 Thomas Drive in Springfield, Virginia. Officer Hunt and Mattis responded to this call. What was the call about? What was the complaint about? Let me read you the notes or narrative, I should say. The people involved include Abid, Awan, and others. But a woman by the name of Samina Galani called the police department after her stepchildren were denying her access to her husband of 8 years, Muhammad Shah, who is currently hospitalized. Now, Shah is hospitalized, it is believed, in Pakistan. Upon arrival, Samina indicated she did not speak English, and an Urdu translator with language line was used to complete this interview. Samina stated her husband has been in the hospital for several months, and apparently, these are my comments now, and apparently he's not doing well, and there's money involved. She stated that she was denied access at least, or at her last visit, or that's right, by her stepson, Abid, who just said, look, I've got control over my stepmother, the money, the power of attorney. He refused to the police, he refused to disclose the father's location. But think about that. The one brother's with the stepmother, holding her essentially hostage. And she claimed that they bugged her phone and because they wanted the money from their father. But over the past few months, this story of the Awan brothers, again, largely ignored by the mainstream media, this is the biggest story there is. The substantial scandal has raised so many questions about who may have passed data to and from these people, who had access to the different servers. And look at the timeline that we started out with. This is incredible. Going back to 2004, 2005, when Imran Awan began working with Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And again, $5 million just in a span of a number of years, a small number of years. And the security letter, request for security clearance, March 22nd, 2016. 8 Democratic members of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence issued a letter requesting that their staffers be granted access to top secret sensitive compartmentalized information, TSSCI. Andre Carson, the second Muslim in Congress. The brothers, again, employed by the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence and the House Committee on Foreign Affairs. I cannot say this enough. And we take it back to Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And this is something that few people have been really talking about, that Imran Awan in particular had access to Debbie Wasserman Schultz's iPad password, her computer password, everything. Meaning that they also had direct access to the DNC emails. Might as well come right out and say that, the DNC emails, okay? There are a few people that I've spoken to who believe that the Awans are blackmailing certain representatives because they're based on the contents of the emails, based on the contents of their mobile devices and computers and such. And that these representatives have displayed this loyalty toward the Awan brothers because, well, they have to. And I cite Gregory Meeks saying, oh, anybody who picks on them, it's just because they're Islamophobic. They're falsely targeted because they're Muslims with some ties to Pakistan. Don't be such a boob, of course. A guy by the name of Pat Sowery, he's managed IT services for several members of Congress, has publicly stated in the recent past that something is wrong. He said that, he was quoted as saying this, there's just no question about it. If I were accused of a tenth of what these guys are accused of, they'd take me out in handcuffs that same day and I'd never work again. And that's very true. Now, the Daily Caller, have to give them props. It was back on February 20th of this year. that they reported that investigators found that the congressional information was being copied to an offsite server, implying once again that the brothers were improperly accessing information and stealing congressional property. Now, according to one congressional staffer, the Awan brothers, what they did was they set up a remote access so they could connect from wherever they are and have full access to everything on the member system. Despite being ordered by the Capitol Police that he was no longer to come near the House servers, Representative Schultz, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, had kept Imran Awan on her payroll as an advisor. In an advisory position, with full pay, in order to circumvent the police orders. Debbie Wasserman Schultz needs to be put before a federal, we need to impanel a federal grand jury, and we need to have an honest and complete investigation of Debbie Wasserman Schultz that'll bring in Huma Abedin, that'll bring in Wiener, Hillary Clinton, and all of these suspects. Hina Alvi, again, fled to Pakistan. Her parents have significant assets there. They give her VIP level protection. The Awan brothers, again, protection in Pakistan. They leave the country. It's going to be difficult to get them back. And then recall, it was on either May 18th or May 24th, that video of Debbie Wasserman Schultz threatening the Capitol Police chief. That was about, reportedly, ostensibly about a laptop found by police after it had been hidden in this unused crevice of the Rayburn House office building, but it was much more than that. She wanted that computer laptop back. The police chief says, nah, right now. And Wasserman Schultz said, there's going to be consequences. But we have to look at the bigger picture as well. And of course, the consequences, that's something we're going to have to take a look at separately because it's going to take too long, and I think that this is a key ingredient in this mess. But Pakistan, they've got ties not just to the U.S., of course, but to China, Saudi Arabia, Israel. There's apparent infiltration here, looking at the bigger picture of the DNC, of these democratic hacks, these progressive hacks, in government systems by these Awans. It's significant given Pakistan's very strategic ties to other countries who also have attempted to influence the U.S. in various ways. Obama, remember Obama, he has ties to Pakistan. Well, what do you mean by that? During the 2008 election, Obama was taken on a trip, it took a trip to Pakistan during a time when you didn't do that. It was back in 81. And he stayed with his college friend, Ali Hassan Chandu. They were considered to be the biggest landlords in their province and big-time people. As a matter of fact, Hassan, they donated somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000 to Obama's 2012 presidential campaign. And the Barack Obama Foundation was founded in 08 in the home of a guy by the name of Alton Ray Bazedon. Bazedon previously served as a counselor with the U.S. embassies in Haiti, Pakistan, Syria, and the Ivory Coast. Now, my emphasis is on Pakistan and Haiti and Syria. Think about that. And you may be wondering, you might be saying, well, what does that have to do with anything? Well, there's a connection here. But there's only so many rabbit holes we can go down, rabbit trails we can go down at one time. The big thing here is the closer we get to striking back at the deep state. And folks, let me tell you something. This was a strike back at the deep state in a big way. Although it was done in a roundabout way, the arrest of Imran Awan is the first of many dominoes. The use of this onion in layers is overused, but when the layers of the onion are are pulled back, you will see layer upon layer upon layer of deception, of fraud, and of giving away top secret information. We have been infiltrated from within. It is an absolutely incredible situation. But when you take a look at Wasserman Schultz, when she, after her resignation and her own hacking scandal, she has been doing nothing but stonewalling the investigation. You talk about obstruction of justice. Debbie Wasserman Schultz has refused today to fire Imran Awan. Instead, circumvented the orders of the police and hired, kept him on as a special advisor with pay, and apparently allowed him to continue access to her computer system, given the fact that even at the May meeting, there was that threat to the police chief, and he still had access to it, despite it was the February 2nd, 2017 banning from the Capitol building. Stay away from the computers, yet she still allowed him access to her computers. In that threat, May 18th or May 24th, when she seemingly threatened to cut off the police department's budget if the police didn't comply with the returning of the laptop that was hidden in the crevice of the office building. And she admitted to violating official information security policy, but she blamed the House Chief Administrative Officer for not stopping her. It's just so bizarre. Her behavior is so bizarre, it would just raise a question as to whether she's even trying to hide the fact that she's obstructing justice. So one has to ask, why would she do this? What's the motive here? Why would she protect the very person who was accused of victimizing her? That is a great question. And that is the next question that we'll address. Why is Debbie Wasserman Schultz protecting Imran Awan, giving him everything he's asking for and more, going to bat for him and his family, as is Meeks and others, when they should be victims themselves? Why? Is your mind wandering yet? What are you thinking? Perhaps you might be right, you might not. I don't know, but I'll tell you this. There is so much more to this. And at the epicenter is Wasserman Schultz. And think back to what we started. When I started out this show, that timeline of events, beginning with the Washington Post on June 14th, 2016, claiming that Russian hackers obtained DNC communications. And then, of course, on July 10th, Seth Rich murdered. And everything before, during, and after, as I just mentioned. All of these situations are intertwined. They're all meshed together. And I'm going to tell you, it takes your attention and my attention, complete attention, to unravel this bowl of spaghetti type leads. But that's exactly what we're doing, because embedded in all of this is so much criminality, so much sedition. It's beyond belief. Folks, until tomorrow, thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. Thanks for your prayers. Thanks for listening. Tune in to Joe's show and John's show from 2 to 3 today, and our show tonight at 7 o'clock. Until then, God bless.
The Doug Hagman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagman Report. Tune in to The Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.